Acts chapter 12, guys, where we are. We need to, Lord willing, finish this up this week. Next week, Steve Doty will be here, and he's going to do both the class and the message. So then we'll transition. Nolan will be teaching some stuff in Acts 13 here in a couple weeks. So I'd like to finish Acts 12 today, Lord willing. So let's... We left off in verse 17. So let's just pick it up, though, in verse 16 and read to the end of the chapter. So Peter continued knocking. When they'd opened the door, they saw him and were amazed. This is where the prayer gathering was for, you know, for Peter and him to, assuming the prayers were for that he would be released in some way. And Peter shows up. They don't really believe him, but he keeps knocking. And when they'd opened the door, they saw him and were amazed. Motioning them with his hand to be silent, he described to them how the Lord had led him out of the prison. And he said, report these things to James and the brethren. And he departed and went to another place. Now when day came, there was no small disturbance among the soldiers as to what could have become of Peter. And when Herod had searched for him and had not found him, he examined the guards in order that they be led away to execution. And he went down from Judea to Caesarea and was spending time there. Now he was very angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon, and with one accord they came to him. And having won over Blastus the king's chamberlain, they were asking for peace, because their country was fed by the king's country. And on an appointed day, Herod, having put on his royal apparel, took a seat on the rostrum and began delivering an address to them. And the people kept crying out, the voice of a god and not of a man. And immediately an angel of the Lord struck him, because he did not give God the glory. And he was eaten by worms and died. But the word of the Lord continued to grow and to be multiplied. And Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem when they had fulfilled their mission, taking along with them John, who was also called Mark. So, we'll pick it up, guys, in verse 18 and following. You know, I find it interesting, when day came, there was no small disturbance among the soldiers. Nobody realized what happened until daytime. God gave some time for Peter to be well on his way before anybody knew what was going on. Because one thing, you read the scriptures and you just consider, you know, if history is his story, isn't it? Because God's in control of the timing of things. You read the Gospel of John, and you see how many times it says in there, you know, his hour had not yet come. Because God's timing is perfect. Sometimes, it's interesting to me, just considering this whole, the events, and we're going to look at one more incident where an angel has an angel of the Lord makes Herod, you know, kick the bucket there. God's working. And you just think about some things that, behind the scenes, that you don't understand, you know, the way things work, why things work the way they do, the timing of things. And I know sometimes, for me, can be a little bit of an attitude check when the timing of things isn't my expected timing of things. But really, Romans 8:28 holds true, doesn't it? God knows what He's doing. God's timing is perfect. And so, you know, whatever the reason is for that time, I mean, sometimes you can see really clearly, wow. Like, it's neat when there's good events that do happen, you say, man, God put this together. Like, this couldn't have happened any other way. Just the way that the events worked, it was perfect timing. But sometimes even on what we think was not perfect timing, it's the same God's in control. He knows what He's doing, and we can trust Him in that. So I just like the fact that, hey, God gave some time. These guys didn't realize what happened. Peter's long gone. One of the phrases from the book of Revelation in reference to the beast from the sea, which is anti-Christian government. Who is able to wage war with the beast? Forget what the rest part of that says, but basically, you know, who can stand against him? But you think about the powerful forces in this world, and there can be a lot of fear that enters into the heart of people when they understand how powerless a human being is to fight against the machine. But as a Christian, guys, God can throw a little wrench in their works whenever He wants to. Or He can throw a big one and derail the whole. But we can have absolute trust and confidence in God. His timing, even on these things, perfect. And so, these are just things that encourage me. Like, hey, God did this. Not only did He let Peter go, but then, like, there was a time delay before the rest of these guys even realized that He was gone. It wasn't until day came they figured that out. It says there must, you know, there was some small disturbance, or no small disturbance among the soldiers. The conclusion I came to is they must have been asleep or something similar. Go back with me for just a second. Well, I don't have time. You guys remember when David's on the run from Saul. So Saul's still the king, but David's been the anointed king. Saul's figured out, like, what more is he going to get from me but the kingdom? Saul's figured out David's the guy that's going to have the kingdom. And so, you know, he's chasing David around. And, you know, the time that David's actually able to sneak down there and cut off an edge of his robe, steal his spear, the scripture actually tells us that the Lord had caused a deep sleep to fall on Saul and all those around him. That's why he was able to do that. These are the ways the Lord works. He can cause that, those kind of things to happen any time that He wants to. Let's go to Matthew 28 real quickly. It's, I guess, one of the things I want to challenge you here on my last day of teaching this part of the book of Acts. We see things in the book of Acts, and we see there were miraculous gifts, right? And those miraculous gifts, we know that those gifts are not present anymore. Those supernatural gifts, gift of tongues, gift of healings, etc. But, and we've covered in depth what the purpose of those gifts were and why those aren't necessary anymore. But in doing that, don't throw out the workings of God on behalf of His people. Don't read this stuff like what the angel does here and think, well, that would never happen. It happened throughout the whole Old Testament, happened throughout the New Testament. Like, God intervenes and fights on behalf of His people anytime, anywhere. Does He have to? No. I mean, you remember Daniel's three friends, right? Got thrown in the fiery furnace. Hey, God doesn't have to, but if He wants to, He can protect us. James, the brother of John, put down the sword. Peter delivered. Those guys knew, like, no matter what, we're going to worship God. We're not going to bow down and worship anybody else. But they knew God's ability and willingness to. Has that somehow changed? Even more, guys, aren't we friends of God? If He didn't spare His own Son while we are enemies, how much is He willing to do for us when we're His friends? So I hope, like, the things that happen in our lives, you know, whether it be an accumulation of little battles that we got to overcome, whether it be big things that are coming in terms of persecution, whatever it is, we have to know and have absolute confidence that when we're walking with the Lord, He's fighting for us. And that theme comes through over and over again in the Scripture. So I guess when you're reading through this, I don't want you to just dismiss these things and blow them off. You know, okay, that was first century. No, God continues to do these things on our behalf. Amen? All right, Matthew 28. What am I looking for here? Let's read 1 through 4. Now after the Sabbath, as it began to dawn toward the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to look at the grave. And behold, a severe earthquake had occurred, for an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled away the stone and sat upon it. And His appearance was like lightning, and His garment as white as snow. And the guards shook for fear of Him and became like dead men. Angels showing up, these guys come like dead men. What do dead men do? Nothing. Now, I think there's a little difference in the account of Matthew 20, you know, when the events of Jesus' resurrection, because these guys seem to have at least recalled some things to report what happened, to actually give some sort of accurate report. The impression I get from Acts 12 is these guys have no clue what happened. But, you know, my point is what God is able to do. So now I have a question for you guys. So it says when Herod had searched for him, back to Acts 12, when Herod had searched for Peter and not found him, he examined the guards and ordered that they be led away to execution. Why a different result than the result of Matthew 28? You know, after Jesus rose from the dead, okay, the guards that were supposed to be watching over him, anybody remember what that result was? With those guards? Mark?
You're talking about they were given money and told the disciples came and stole him and get in trouble with the higher up political authority will cover you.
Exactly. So they were actually given some money and said, hey, go tell this story. And if it reaches the governor's ears, hey, we'll make sure you stay out of trouble, right? So, why would this go down a little differently? Okay. Larry?
Is this in Acts 12, is that dealing with more Roman authorities? Roman authorities,
I think it's the opposite, actually. I think in Matthew 28, the Roman governor is Pilate. And he really doesn't care. He didn't want Jesus to be. He didn't have a dog in the fight. He didn't want Jesus to be crucified, right? Herod is kind of in between thing. But he does have a lot of interaction with the Jews. And Herod has a vested interest in this. These were his orders. You guys remember Pilate, like, watching this. He doesn't care. However, Jesus got away. But Herod, this is on the line. This is his deal, right? He gave these orders. That's what I'm thinking. Super Dave.
The way I see it is, he was wanting to bring him out and execute him in front of everybody to judge. Usually there's a sign, do not worship Christ, or this is what's going to happen. He was trying to just make an example.
Yeah.
And when it didn't go his way, he's upset.
Yeah, it makes him look bad. It didn't go his way. Sweeney, I'll try to follow the rules here. Get around to everybody. Sorry, I'm trying to shortcut from my feet.
It's an extra exercise after youth camp. My thought on this is there was also a huge culture clash between not only just the Romans and the Jews, but even in the power struggle there, you look at the way the governments were set up. The Romans really couldn't care as long as the Jews paid their taxes. In the end, for them, it was the money bag. On the Jews' side, they hated the Romans being there because they felt they needed to be their own nation. They felt the land was theirs and that they shouldn't be under it. I mean, Jesus asked the question, you know, or Jesus makes the statement, you know, the truth shall set you free. It's like, but we're not enslaved. Your Romans are in your streets daily. Mm-hmm. I think part of that is also, like they were saying, Herod wanted to make a point of the Christians. I mean, Herod was a Jew, and to them, Christianity was an affront to Judaism.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, all those things definitely come into play. Kevin, did you have something?
This is the first, after Jesus' death, this is the first evidence of fake news by CNN, Centurion News Network.
Thank you. I definitely got you guys' wheels going. Yeah, that's good.
Your wheels are going. I was seeing Matthew 28. It says they actually paid off the guards with a large sum of money, but they did it for a reason. They didn't want those guards to die. If those guards died, then those guards couldn't spread the false report. They needed to actually keep their witnesses alive, whereas in Acts 12, they didn't need to keep them alive. In fact, like you mentioned, Herod was just infuriated, so off of their heads.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there was a double purpose there with the other. Hey, as long as these guys are here, let's give them some money and have them start telling a false story. But there's really no good false story that they're going to be able to tell in this case. So the the thing that makes sense to do is let's finish these guys off. We're not doing their job.
I just had a question that's kind of something that stuck out to me. In verse 17, in the end of it, I know things are never laid out as far as human terms, but it says, report these things to James and the brethren. Now, I know James, the brother of John, already been killed. So this is James, the brother of Jesus.
Correct.
But is there any place other indicating, because the previous it says the apostles and the brethren spread out through Judea. Was there any indicating that he was kind of, you know, the spokesperson for this group of people that were, you know, were there? Because I know those things aren't normally just thrown out there.
Yeah.
And you're including everybody, James and the brethren. So I wasn't able to put that together.
Yeah, good question, Justin. I touched on it at the end of last week, but didn't really deal with it in any depth. So I was kind of skipping over it. But it's a really good question. And the way I'm going to just answer it quickly is there is such a thing as scriptural leadership. Okay, James, the brother of Jesus, he's not an apostle, so we're not talking about apostles here. But he's a leading man among the brethren. Matter of fact, in Galatians, he's somebody who's spoken of as a man of high reputation. Okay. So, and then you look at Acts chapter 15, there's a council there where they're trying to determine Jew-Gentile-Christian relations and what the expectations are of Gentiles. And James comes forth and has some words to say about it, and everybody listens up. We know from extra-biblical history that James was an elder at the church in Jerusalem. Okay, so when we see later elders are going to be appointed fairly quickly on some of these missionary journeys, my guess, Justin, it's only a guess, but my guess is that James is already an elder at the church in Jerusalem. But I can't prove that to you scripturally. But that would be my guess. He certainly is a leading man among the brethren. And so when he hears this, that information is going to come from him and it's going to influence everybody else's perspective of things. I'm going to make sure he gets the straight scoop. Does that answer that well enough? Okay. All right. So, jumping back, yeah, Herod questioned the guards, had them executed. They're usually in the political realm, there is a fall guy or fall guys, aren't there? Like Herod doesn't want to look bad, so we got to do something. We're going to blame these guys. And that's the way the world works, and you guys know that. At every level of the world, you've probably been recipients of that at some point. Your boss might tell you privately, I know you didn't do anything wrong, but somebody's got to... And maybe they don't even tell you privately, but we all know that they know. But somebody's got to take the blame, and it's not going to be me, so it's going to be you. That's just the way it works, right, in the world. So here, there's going to be a little focus on, just really short focus here on Herod, the rest of this chapter in the book of Acts. A couple big things. I see God is always working. I like that. The devil used Herod to take a shot at the Christians, and God's about to fire back. So let's go back to Acts 12. In hit 20 through 23. Now he, that's Herod, was very angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon, and with one accord they came to him, having won over Blastus, the king's chamberlain. They were asking for peace because their country was fed by the king's country. On an appointed day, Herod, having put on his royal apparel, took a seat on the rostrum and began delivering an address to them. And the people kept crying out, "The voice of a god and not of a man." And immediately an angel of the Lord struck him because he did not give God the glory, and he was eaten by worms and died. So, the people of Tyre and Sidon are in trouble. Okay? Herod's, we've seen what can happen when Herod's angry. Okay? So, they want to make peace with Herod, and they get Blastus on their side. Okay? Politics is always the same. Okay? We go, and we figure out who we can get in with, and who we can make deals with, and all this. It's the story of the human race. And they were asking for peace because their country was fed by the king's country. We could spend all morning on this, so no comments from you guys on this particular part. I'm just going to dangle something out here to make you want to say something. Guys, there are always strings attached with governmental funds. Kevin, you listen so well. there are always strings attached with governmental funds. Okay? I would repeat that, except that you're not following my instructions. So anyways, guys, just something to remember. It's true in general, but it's very true with government. So whenever government offers you something for free, understand that that's a team by which they're making you their slaves. All right? So just good to keep in mind. All right, so they wanted to make peace because they were fed by the king's country. Now, this next part's interesting, right? Herod puts on his royal apparel, takes a seat, delivers an address. People are crying out the voice of a god, not of a man. So there were some things that, well, I actually want to read you something from J.W. McGarvey, his notes on this from Josephus. Josephus says of the royal apparel in which he was arrayed, said that it was woven wholly of silver threads, the glittering of which in the morning sun suggested the idolatrous exclamation of the multitude. He also relates that Herod was seized with pains in the bowels so violent that he had to be carried into the palace and lingered 5 days in excruciating torments from the worms also mentioned by Luke. This historian mentions some circumstances of a superstitious character in connection with this terrible event, but his account agrees substantially with that of Luke. Thus was the righteous judgment of God, which is chiefly reserved for the future state, displayed even in the world for the terror of wicked men and the encouragement of the righteous. So from the time I first read that when I was a kid, I always wondered, like, how'd that happen? You know, he's up there and he's displaying himself as this great guy and, you know, got on the royal apparel and the glittering and the people are the voice of a god and not of a man. You know, they're playing along with it, right? They're doing their part because they want to continue to be fed. They want to make him happy, give this guy what he wants to hear. How's the scripture say that? Immediately an angel of the Lord struck him because he did not give God the glory. He was eaten by worms and died. So I was like, as a kid, I pictured like, all of a sudden, while he's up there in front of everybody, like, do these worms, like, start coming out of his body? Or, you know, so the little bit of extra historical information, you know, I think as an adult, I would have probably figured out anyways the way that kind of went down. But the point here that I like from the scriptural account is this is judgment from God. This isn't just, okay, this guy got a sickness, and it just, you know, like, this was judgment from God. God allowed this to take place, and this guy's in excruciating pain for the next 5 days. Because God's sovereign. God can take out anybody, anytime. Good to remember. You know, God always wins. Always. If it doesn't look like God won here, it's because this was not the time, this was not the moment in which God's name could be magnified and exalted the way that it should be. Like, there's an opportunity coming. Like, God is gonna be glorified. Like, don't forget that. I think it's important in our life. Like, there is no, like, you know, we're Christians, so we've already chosen, like, we know we want to be on God's side. But sometimes, like, I think you can get a little bit of a casual attitude that maybe, you know, okay, I'll just kind of neutral in this sort of stuff. Okay, no, nobody's neutral. There's a spiritual war, and you are on one side or the other. Okay, go with me to Romans chapter 9 really quickly. I just like the way that this is brought out. Romans 9, verse 17. So the scripture says to Pharaoh, for this very purpose, I raised you up to demonstrate my power in you and that my name might be proclaimed throughout the whole earth. You guys remember the Exodus and the plagues and all that? Okay, this was not just to set God's people free. This was so that every nation around, as God's people went out, they all knew about God and who He is. God used Pharaoh for this very purpose. I raised you up. And then I want to jump down here in this to verses 22 and 23. What if God, although willing to demonstrate His wrath and to make His power known, endured with much patience vessels of wrath prepared for destruction? Sometimes we might look around the world and we might wonder, how long, O Lord, how long, right? To steal from the souls under the altar in the book of Revelation. How long are you going to let this stuff happen? Hey, God is willing to endure with much patience vessels of wrath prepared for destruction. And He did so in order that He might make known the riches of His glory upon vessels of mercy which He prepared beforehand for glory. Is every single person, is it going to be a vessel of honor or a vessel of dishonor? Everybody's going to be used by God. And the ultimate purpose, even of those who are going to be used by God, where His wrath is going to be unleashed on them, is for the glory of God through His people. Like, you read the end, all those Old Testament accounts. Gideon and his 300, right? Who gets glorified out of that? And that's God. And God's people along with that. But it's God. Like, there's no way anybody but God could have done that. You read the book of Revelation, don't you get the picture? Like, the way this whole thing goes down at the end. Like, this whole part that we're in, guys, it is building towards the end where God is going to be glorified through His people. So you might, sometimes I wonder, like, how can you allow this to go on? How can you let all these evil men and the schemes that they're running and, the conspiracies that they've had going and building towards, and you see some of those things coming to fruition. Hundreds of years of evil that have been playing, that is coming out, how can you allow this, Lord? I mean, those are thoughts that I talk to God about sometimes. Not that I'm challenging you, I'm trying to figure it out. It's like you read Habakkuk, right? He asks those questions. The answers are here, though. God endures with great patience these vessels of wrath. Like, they're not going to get off. They're not going to win. But He does it for Him to be glorified. And so, even Revelation 17, let's turn there really quickly. I like the end of this. Revelation 17, verses 16 and 17. The 10 horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot, and will make her desolate and naked, and will eat her flesh, and will burn her up with fire. They were all on the same team. Okay, you read everything up to this. They were on this. For God has put it in their hearts to execute His purpose by having a common purpose, and by giving their kingdom to the beast until the words of God should be fulfilled. Guys, God's sovereign. He wins. And at the perfect time, the evil people who are unified in their evil, they turn against each other. We have a great God. He wins. And so in the moment, I like the book of Acts, because in the moment you see these things, God's working. Big picture, you see these things, God's working. But in the moment, guys, the people in the church there, they didn't know what happened when James, the brother of John, was being put to death with the sword. They didn't even really expect Peter to be delivered. They probably didn't understand at the time why Herod died. But the view from the throne, from eternal perspective, like, this is God's answer. People fight against the church, as God has the back. The church is back. He is with you. So, I find that super encouraging. Every punch in the book of Acts, God gives a counter punch. Acts 12:24, the word of the Lord continued to grow and to be multiplied. And throughout this book, we've seen arrests get followed by rescues, etc. The end result we see again and again and again is growth of the church. So now here's my big question. Because, do you guys agree, up to this point in time in the book of Acts, this is what we've seen. Continued growth of the church. The answer of God. What happened after Acts was completed? Let's just be honest about this. Let's say from the time of 100 AD, the next 1700 years, where's the church? The true church. I don't think it's non-existent. Matter of fact, I know the way that God works, like the kingdom's eternal. Whether or not there is anybody on earth at the time. But I even think, I gotta believe the way this imperishable seed works. The guys writing the history books are usually the bad guys. Right? But I do wonder, there is something drastic happened. A change, a shift. We see this in the book of Acts. Hey, the church gets persecuted, God answers back. The church gets persecuted, God answers back. There's always this counterpunch. And the result is the church continues to grow. So what happened? There's a question that Jesus asks in reference to his return. When the Son of Man comes, will he find the faith on the earth? It's a fair question. And it tells you something. God acts. God works with his people when his people have faith. Without going into the history right now, but around 100 AD and the events that happened thereafter, that faith really got lost. People caved in to the false doctrines. Probably because of the persecution, too. Etc. I just want each of us to consider, I think all of us have to really have a personal investment in the kingdom. We have to each, it's fun to be a part of a great congregation. It's fun to be a part of God's church worldwide. But, at some point there's a little personal gut check. For every one of us, what am I going to do? No matter what. Somebody asked a great question years ago, and unfortunately, as time went on, events played out, they couldn't answer the question the right way. But it was a great question. And it can't really happen, but if the church were to go down today, how much would you lose? How much of you, but it should be, the answer for us should be everything. Not that the church can go down. But I just want to, I'll be right with you later. I just really want to make a point, guys. God gives guidance and growth to his people when we walk in faith. And so I think we got to, personally, what do you want? I know I'm an evangelist, so I'm wired a little differently than your average Joe. And I don't mean that in a condescending way. I just mean, as you guys know, sometimes I'm a little edgy and things like that. But you've heard me say, hey, as long as I'm here, boom, 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 these things, these are going to be in place as long as I'm here. But I challenge you guys individually, personally. If you're not an evangelist, you have a, as long as I'm here, as long as I'm alive, there will be the faith on the earth. I'm going to give God an opportunity, a conduit through which he will work and can continue to demonstrate his power. Because that is really what God's looking for. Read the book of Ezekiel. Looking for one man who would stand in the gap before me. And so yourself, you got to have that personally, as long as I'm alive, I will. we got to think about this congregation. And where will this congregation be 50 years from now? You know, some of us that have been here for a long time, hey, there's some faithful brethren that have passed on to glory. Very, very faithful brethren that have passed on to glory. And, you know, if you're paying attention, you're looking, you should ask, well, who's going to be the next Alvin Hopper? Who's going to be the next Don Love? Who's going to be the next... And somebody, you know, in your own mind, like you need the next Terry Sloan. Who's going to be these people? You have to plug in and say, hey, that's somebody I can be, or somebody like them. We are tremendously blessed here. Guys, even the stage in which we are, like we got some work to do and we gotta take the next step. But lots of us walked into a place that there's some things that are built and there's a culture that's here and there's we have to come back, and even if we walk into that, we have to come back and we have to get the same faith for it to go the next step. For it to go to the next generation. We have to say, this is who I am. God's power didn't run out at the end of the first century. People lost faith. The book of Acts is written, guys, for us, the church. This is who the church is. These are the things the church does. And while we are doing those things, God is doing the impossible things. But if we quit our part, God won't work in this. He wants His people. He wants His church. Larry.
I was just going to say, it's interesting that even the secular media has figured out there's an increase in suicides, you know, especially, and not just in kids. There's an increase in suicides of people 60 years old and older. You know why? You know, you can eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die, but, you know, that works when you're in your 30s, maybe 40s, but you get to 60 and it's like, what's this life got to offer? If we're not living for heaven, if you don't have that hope, when the stuff of this life gives out, and I don't care who you are, it will give out, what are you going to have?
Exactly.
What's there? The hope really is the hope of heaven. You have that hope, it goes past this life.
Amen. Yeah. Yeah, I wonder often why more people don't, in one form or another, pull the trigger. There is something built in, you know, eternity in each one's heart that I think keeps more. But yeah, it's, guys, we're living for the one thing that matters. There's a kingdom that endures forever and only one. You read the book of Daniel, all these world kingdoms, they here and they're gone, here and gone, here and gone. There is one kingdom that endures forever. You want purpose in your life? Live for the kingdom. That's the only purpose that's worth living for. So the last verse of Acts 12:25, Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem when they had fulfilled their mission, taking along with them John, who was also called Mark. You guys remember Barnabas and Saul took money from Antioch to help the brethren in Judea. That kind of was the end of chapter 11. And it's probable to me the way that Luke, I like Luke as a historian and the way he puts stuff in here. He is calculated about the way he does it. It's probable that, you know, from the events of 11 on into 13, that Barnabas and Saul were in Jerusalem at the time of the events of chapter 12. We don't know that for sure, but it's very probable they went back, okay, with the money, and then we get this account. But I want you to notice, they returned from Jerusalem when they had fulfilled their mission. They completed their mission. One other thing, I'm just going to exhort all of us as individuals, follow through. We say we're going to do something, we do it. It's amazing to me how rare that is, even within the Lord's church. I know we're all in, you know, a work in progress. I know there's something in my life I've had to work on to finish things, to finish what I start, to finish, to follow. Faithful people follow through. Follow through. Say you're going to do something, do it. And it starts the little things. Okay, I'm appreciative of the brethren. You know, guys, really, we have... I'm proud of you guys. Like, it's been a long time. It's a very rare thing that we sign up to clean the church building and doesn't get done. It used to happen quite a bit. It's a rare thing that somebody doesn't show up to do something up front without having gotten somebody to cover for them. We follow through. We say we're going to do something. Okay? Follow through. In those little things, what's Jesus say? He was faithful. The little things, faithful so much. So let's follow through. We see that, Barnabas and Saul, and we're going to see the rest of the book of Acts, okay? Largely about what these guys do. And it's going to switch to Paul, the last part. But okay, they came back to Antioch. They brought John Mark with them. He's going to be a player, okay, that shows up. She was, you know, his mom owned the house in which the brethren had been gathered together. The focus comes back, Barnabas and Saul, really setting the stage for chapter 13, and then those missionary journeys that are going to follow, really to the rest, the end of the rest of the book of Acts. I've enjoyed getting to think through the book of Acts with you guys, and hope you keep having fun. This, let me just ask you this: 2,000 years ago, is it relevant today? Doctrine hasn't changed, and who the church is hasn't changed. It's an example, guys. A beautiful picture of who the church is. And I like, personally, one of my favorite things in going through this is just seeing all the little ways that are interwoven in there in the church's interaction, the way that the church operates. Pretty awesome. So, let's be the church. Thanks.